Welcome back to the Daily Drum on 96.3 WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Well, it goes without saying that the coronavirus has had a devastating and deadly impact on communities and families, not just here in the U.S., but across the globe. Now the race is on to find a vaccine. That means research and trials. Recently, Georgetown, Howard University Center of Clinical and Translational Science has announced a need for volunteers to participate in coronavirus clinical trials. Might you be interested in participating in such a trial? And if so, what should you know? And what role could and should African Americans play in COVID-19 research? Those questions and more we will address tonight and try to answer. If you have a question or comment, the phone lines are open. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our guest tonight, Dr. Carla Williams, Associate Professor of Medicine and Public Health with Howard University Hospital, and Dr. Lisa Fitzpatrick, Infectious Disease Physician and Founder and CEO of Grapevine Health Medical Center. Again, the phone lines are open. We'd like you to be part of this conversation. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Doctors, thank you so much for joining us tonight for this important conversation.
Thank you, Bernard.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Dr. Fitzpatrick, let's start with you. Just a general update on what is happening. Let's stick to the U.S. Regarding COVID-19 and what people should know about what's happening right now across the nation.
Well, we're still in a dire situation with several states seeing surges in cases. And a lot of this, I think, is mostly a result of defiance of public health guidance. We've known for a long time that it's within our control to stop the spread of coronavirus by implementing very basic public health measures like wearing a mask, which has now somehow become a political statement, social distancing, so trying to stay at least 6 feet apart, and keeping your gathering small. But I think the most important thing is staying home if you're sick. We're still having people who are out in the public with or without a mask who may be sick, and they really should stay home if at all possible. So we still have a public health crisis on our hands.
And Dr. Frederick, we know that just today, the county executive in Prince George's County had talked about large gatherings. I know you just mentioned that, in family gatherings, and she is sort of coming down hard on saying there will be $5,000 fines and possibly jail time if gatherings go beyond the size that they should be. And so we know that the coronavirus is spreading in other states surrounding the DMV. The mayor of the district has put a moratorium on folks coming into the district that they do from 27 states that are hotspots. She is saying that you have to quarantine for 14 days. So should we be alarmed in this area as it looks like that virus, which is picking up, is moving north?
Well, I think there is reason for concern, only because as much as we'd like to be able to control the borders, it's very easy to get from state to state, and especially to come into the district, because there are other ways to get here other than flying. So when state health and state and federal officials talk about these fines or these policies to deter a certain behavior, I don't know that they're enforceable. I also think there's a slippery slope when you have such a heavy-handed approach, because sometimes that erodes trust and makes people dig their heels in a little bit more to say, I'm exercising, you know, my right as an American to do what I please. So I think there's a fine line you have to walk. But yes, to answer your question, there is reason for concern, because we've seen that we can't rely on every American to do his or her part.
And we've just seen a congressman from Texas has tested positive for coronavirus. He was not wearing a mask during the hearings that were on the Hill the past 2 days. I think it's Louis Gohmert. I might be mispronouncing his name. Congressman from Texas. And he has said he believes he contracted the disease because he was wearing a mask. He felt like, you know, from touching the mask from other places. So we obviously can get a little bit more into that just about the mask. But we're centering on two clinical trials as it relates to the coronavirus. And Dr. Williams, Dr. Fitzpatrick mentioned the word trust. And when we're talking about clinical trials, no matter what it is, a lot of folks are sort of nervous about being a part of a clinical trial. But talk about how important it is to have folks volunteer to be part of a trial when you're looking for a vaccine for a disease that you don't have a vaccine for at the moment.
Well, Bramante, the volunteers who participate in these research studies, they are really the true heroes because these studies cannot be done without the people who agree to take part. So these are experiments, and that word sometimes does scare people. Clinical trials means that it's a research project with people, and the goal is to try to find ways to prevent diseases, better treatments, reduce symptoms, and improve quality of life. But that word experiment does tend to give people reason to wonder. But I think some take-home points we want to talk about is that the way that these studies are done are designed to really focus on safety, to really focus on making sure that any new treatment, such as a vaccine that comes to market for people to use, has been shown to not only be safe, but also to be effective for a wide range of people. And that's why the research volunteers are so important, because we have to have a wide range of ages. We have to have people of all genders. We have to have people with lots of different health conditions and backgrounds and lifestyles. So in order to know that a new treatment or something like a vaccine will work for everyone, we need everyone to be involved.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our topic tonight, the coronavirus research for a vaccine, becoming involved in clinical trials and what that means for those who might participate, and specifically what that might mean for African Americans. Dr. Williams, you had mentioned that when people hear trials and clinical trials, they kind of step back for a moment. And we know historically clinical trials have not always been a friend to African Americans. And so I'm going to have you and Dr. Fitzpatrick talk a little bit about that. And I'll go with you first, Dr. Williams. The barriers that are there to convince African Americans to be part of clinical trials and why those barriers might exist historically.
Absolutely. So many people will recognize the term the Tuskegee experiment. As we know, that was a research project gone very wrong, in which men who were diagnosed with known syphilis were not told that they had the condition, and they were misled about what was going on, that they thought they were being treated when actually they were not. And after an effective treatment was identified, the men were denied that treatment without having that knowledge. And Tuskegee is not the only story, but what we can focus on now, yes, we need to know that history. Of course, we always need to know our history, but we also need to know what that history has brought us here in current times, and what has changed since Tuskegee and because of Tuskegee and because of what those men went through. So I think we need to go in depth about what we're doing today to make sure that people are truly protected, not only protected, but they're involved, and that they have a say in the type of research that happens and what happens in their communities.
And Dr. Fitzpatrick, should today, in 2020, should African Americans be afraid of being part of a clinical trial? Because I can tell you, I have very close family members who do not trust doctors. And I've had to say, listen, if you're not feeling well, you still have to go to the doctor. And they feel like if I go to the doctor, it is only going to make me sicker. So I can see when you're talking about just being, as some people see it, as a lab monkey. Monkey is probably the wrong term to use, but just sort of a lab test animal, that there's no way that they're going to be involved in that. So I would think it would be hard to convince African Americans to become involved, but yet it is important. So there is some data to see how African Americans are reacting to diseases, correct?
Yes, absolutely. I think the points you're both making are very valid. But, you know, I'll say the skepticism and distrust we find around participating in research studies or even engaging in healthcare are not always linked to things like Tuskegee, because some people don't necessarily know about Tuskegee. But the point is, their interactions with the healthcare system today is creating reason for them to be skeptical about participating in trials and even seeking healthcare because of the disrespect, the bias, the racism they encounter when they enter the healthcare system. So I think, yes, it is very important for Black people to participate in research studies. But the researchers and the study investigators have an obligation to build trust and understand some of these reservations so that there is an opportunity to educate and help people understand what's happening during a trial, ensuring people recognize how and why it's safe. Because without that education and without that trust building, I think we'll continue to see the lackluster participation in clinical trials.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We have two excellent doctors in the house tonight to talk about clinical trials, specifically COVID-19, why and how you might participate, and if you are African-American, why it is important to participate and why some might be reluctant to do so. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Williams, for those of us who know about the Tuskegee Institute, the Tuskegee clinical trials, and they go back to the 30s and 40s, what has changed since Tuskegee to really make folks feel, if you're African American, right, more settled that I can participate in a trial? And why is it beneficial, and can you be paid for it?
Sure, all great questions. Some important things that have changed because of instances like Tuskegee, that any research that's done now with people has to go under very strict review before anything can happen. Researchers like Dr. Fitzpatrick and myself and everyone who is involved in research, anyone who's on the team, has to go through a relatively extensive training. We have to get retrained frequently to make sure that we are aware of the ethical issues that are in play and that we need to be aware of. So before you can talk to a person, invite a person to be in research, that study has to be very carefully reviewed and the team has to be very highly trained with a real focus on the ethical practice. But another important point is not just the research team itself and who's looking at that data, who's looking at the study, is the participants. And that's why discussions like this are so important, is that the people who are thinking about volunteering for a study need to know their rights. There's something called a participant's bill of rights, and it tells people what they're entitled to know, what they're entitled to know and to do as being a research participant. And a key to that is a word that we use called informed consent. It means the things that the men in Tuskegee didn't have, that you know what you're being asked to do. You know what the potential risks are. You know what the benefits might be for you, and if there are any benefits. Every research project doesn't necessarily have benefits to the individual participant. But the point is that people now can be empowered to ask these questions and to have their questions answered and make their own choices about being in a study. And so those are some of the key safeguards, but there are even more that we can talk about in more depth. One I want to definitely talk about is the role of communities as advisors and as research partners. And that's another way to watch over what's happening with the research and make sure that community perspectives and priorities are represented.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Important information tonight. If you didn't know how clinical trials worked and how you can be part of them and how important it is for all folks to be involved in clinical trials. Tonight is the night for you to listen in. And if you have a question or comment, give us a call, 202-319-7810. Let's go to the phone lines now. Pamela calling from Virginia. Go right ahead, Pamela, with your question or comment.
Hi. I actually used to work for the NMA during SARS, and the SARS vaccine was never completed. I think it is so critical this round that black people participate in the clinical trials. My dad actually participated in prostate cancer trials, and I think that participation was important. I'm willing to participate in clinical trials because we have to make sure this vaccine works for us. I have asthma. A lot of my family members have diabetes and other chronic conditions. It is not acceptable for everybody to shrug their shoulders and say, oh, yeah, COVID is disproportionately impacting people of color. African Americans and Hispanic people are dying, and we're dying in disproportionate numbers. So we have to be a part of the clinical trials, but we have to oversee what's going on as well. So I'm a supporter. I'm willing to participate. I don't know who to contact, but I just thought it was really important that I say that because my dad did participate in clinical trials, and he lived for many, many years after his participation.
Well, thank you so much, Pamela, for that important information. We're going to go to break in 1 second. Dr. Williams or Fitzpatrick, before we run out of time, do you either one have some information where folks, if they want to participate, where they should go?
Yes, I would say the best place to go is a website, clinicaltrials.gov, and that's a repository of pretty much every trial that's going on in the U.S. and even some outside of the U.S., clinicaltrials.gov.
Great information. We're going to continue this conversation, and we'll reshare that on the other side. So if you're on the line, stay right there. We're going to get to you. We will continue on SiriusXM Channel 141. Again, the phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. The original Quiet Storm with John Mons is next on 96.3 WHUR. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on HUR Voices, SiriusXM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Tonight we are talking about clinical trials, specifically the importance of trials, and specifically on coronavirus and how you can participate in a trial to find a vaccine for the virus that does not exist at this moment. Who should be involved? Why are some resistant to being involved in trials, specifically communities of color, and more specifically, African Americans and the historical baggage, maybe, which comes with that? The phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We'd like to hear from you. Have you been involved in a clinical trial? If so, how did it go? What can you share with our other listeners? And if you want to be involved in a trial, this is your chance to ask a question on what you need to know. Our guest tonight, Dr. Carla Williams, Associate Professor of Medicine and Public Health with Howard University Hospital, and Dr. Lisa Fitzpatrick, Infectious Disease Physician and Founder and CEO of Grapevine Health Medical Center. Again, the phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Fitzpatrick, let's talk a little bit, if we can, about who, in terms of gender, is underrepresented in clinical trials. Is there an underrepresentation of men versus women, and is it important from a gender standpoint who's participating?
Oh, that's a great question. I think it depends on the trial, and the recruitment for trials, depending on what they're for, tend to be fairly intentional by the researchers. But I think in general, you see a predominance of men, but also white men in studies. And so I think it's really important, as Dr. Williams suggested earlier, that we have a balance, a diversity of backgrounds, gender, social circumstance, so that we get a good understanding of how effective the vaccine will be in the population. But I also wanted to thank you for inviting people who participated in trials to raise their voice and offer their perspective, because I think to convince Black and brown people to participate in clinical trials will require understanding that people like them have participated in research and had a good experience. You know, I've referred patients into clinical trials, and some of them have come back and been surprised at what a positive experience they've had.
Hmm.
And finally, on the street, we do a lot of outreach here in Southeast D.C., and we hear lots of people saying, well, I'm not going to take the vaccine because they'll give you coronavirus,
mm-hmm.
or
yes.
I just don't want to be first.
Right.
So we just need to educate people and encourage them by letting them hear people's stories.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. This is such an important conversation. And as Dr. Fitzpatrick just mentioned, we still have folks out there, especially in minority communities, that don't want to participate in trials, may not even want to go to the doctor if they feel like they have symptoms of COVID-19, because they feel like if they go to the doctor, if they don't have it, they will leave with it. So that's important. Let's go back to the phone lines. Roland is on the line calling from Maryland. Go right ahead, Roland, with your question or comment.
Yes, I'm a retired medical researcher, and I haven't participated in clinical trials myself, but some of my colleagues have, and they've been very happy with the safeguards. And another fact that hasn't been brought out is that participants will be paid for their participation. And it's mm-hmm. very important for Black folks to participate, because we're the race that's more affected by the virus than any other. We have more deaths than anybody else. So it's very important that we participate.
And Roland, was being paid an incentive for you?
Well, it was for my colleagues who did participate.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't participate myself, and they were very happy with the safeguards that were available. And NIH does pay participants for participating in clinical trials.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much, Roland, for sharing that information. And Dr. Williams, I did kind of want to zero in on the financial aspect incentive a little bit more, because I know folks are probably out there thinking, wait a minute, you get paid for that? How much do you get paid? How often do you get paid? So some folks may see it, the financial side of it, as an incentive for participating. And if that is their incentive, is there anything wrong with that?
I would say it's nothing wrong with people making the decision for what's important for them.
Right.
But I will tell you that the vast majority of people who participate say they're doing it because they really realize it's going to help someone else.
Mm-hmm.
The compensation is just recognizing that people are giving their time. People may be taking off from work. They may have to travel to a particular place to be part of the study, and there's travel expenses involved.
Mm-hmm.
And so the compensation is really that, is to compensate back for the time and effort that people have put into the study. But in my personal experience with research participants, you ask them and they say it's because they know it can help someone else.
Mm-hmm. And I would assume the financial side of it, it just depends on the study and who's conducting the study. Because I'm sure folks are out there and they're hearing that, and they may want to know, just to have a general idea of, like, well, you know, what does this mean? Even if I want to do it for, you know, good reasons and not for the money, they still may be wondering, I wonder what it is. What is the compensation for it?
Yes, and it will vary from study to study. Sometimes if it's something like a survey, it might be $25.
Mm-hmm.
If it's something like a, you know, significant medical testing, it may be $100 for each visit.
Mm-hmm.
This particular vaccine trial that was just announced this week is somewhere in the order of about $2,000, I believe, over the period of 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not like, you know, it's all a lump sum at one point. It's each time you come in, there's an amount that they compensate you for your time.
And I think you're making an important point. Some of these trials, too, you have to be involved in just beyond coming in one time. It may go over a length of time. Would that be correct?
Oh, absolutely, because that's the important part. Again, we're always talking about safety. We have to see, you know, what happens after you've had the treatment or had the vaccine for a while. Mm-hmm. And so with this particular trial that's just announced most recently, again, it's going to be 2 years that people are going to be asked to be in a study. And so that's why it's important to ask those kind of questions. How long will I be in the study? You know, what am I going to be asked to do? How many visits will I make? What is the compensation for my time?
Joining us tonight, Dr. Lisa Fitzpatrick, infectious disease physician and founder and CEO of Grapevine Health Medical Center, and Dr. Carla Williams, associate professor of medicine and public health with Howard University. And you out there, we want you to be part of this conversation, your questions, your concerns, your comments. Phone line, the number is 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Let's go back to those phone lines. Paula is calling from Frederick, Maryland. Go right ahead, Paula, with your question or comment.
Hi, yes. I just wanted to ask her, you know, we've been test studies for years. When are we going to be?
Now, I'm going to stop you for a second, Paula. When you say we, who is we? Who are you talking about?
I mean, Black people in general, sorry.
That's
Black people in general have been tested for everything, like the Tuskegee Airmen. Mm-hmm. She said a lot of people don't know their history, which is true, and they should educate themselves. But I don't want that study. I would never do that study. I'm sorry.
Why not? Because of the history, Paula?
Because of the history.
Now, Paula, if we don't have African Americans being tested, then how can we know how African Americans may react to a potential vaccine, and so how they may have to be treated differently? So, if African, I'm saying we because I'm African American.
Okay, so African Americans are different from everybody else?
No, but we do know, and I'll let the doctors chime in. We do know African Americans are more susceptible to sickle cell anemia, right?
Yes,
okay.
That's
okay.
True.
So there are medical things that are different, but I hear what you're saying. So I'm going to let the doctors jump in on that. And if you have another question, Paula, you can hang on the line. Dr. Fitzpatrick, okay. Paula is going, you know, right at it. She's saying, look, the history is out there. Not me. Not going to do it. So she's the tough nut to crack, right?
And I think some of the safeguards Dr. Williams talked about have been put in place to try and make people more comfortable with the process now. Mm-hmm. Because the transparency is so critical. But, you know, she's raising another point, and that is there's a school of thought now that's emerged quite a lot after, you know, with all this discussion around racism and bias in healthcare. Mm-hmm. And this school of thought is that race is actually a social construct, which means race is not something we should be using to make medical or clinical decisions.
Hmm.
But I think it has to be more nuanced than that for the reason you just raised. So mm-hmm. there are some things that we know, some medical conditions that are more common depending on your race and ethnicity. So I think while technically, we're all humans and we should respond the same, I think we still need to understand what's happening at the internal level. I don't want to get too technical,
mm-hmm.
but there are some things we really need to understand better about how the body responds for different people. And so I think it is important to have this diversity of Black and brown people in studies.
And Dr. Williams, so again, I go back to Paula. She's the tough one, right? She's the one. So do you say to someone like Paula, hey, listen, let me tell you about the advantages of doing this and why it's important? Or do you have to say, listen, we probably can't spend a lot of time on trying to convince someone like Paula because she's there, you know, for her own reasons. And we have to sort of focus on those who are open to participating. Or is Paula the one that you need to turn around, that if you can convince her, that then she can tell other skeptics that, wait, listen, maybe this isn't as bad as we thought it might be?
Well, my goal for Paula would be that she makes her own informed choice.
Okay.
The keyword there, well, two keywords, informed, and mm-hmm. then it's her choice.
Mm-hmm.
So make the choice based on the best available information. Ask questions. Dig into the data. Dig into what the study is about, what led up to the study.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where folks like myself and my colleagues come in, and Dr. Fitzpatrick. We're going out trying to make sure that people have the information.
Mm-hmm.
You can't really make a choice if you don't actually have the information to work with. So
right.
that's step one. And then once someone like Paula has the information, it's absolutely their choice. Weigh the pros and cons for yourself, for your family, and then make your decision. But make sure you have good information up front.
I think the other thing to add here, though, is mm-hmm. just to, as we educate people about this process, because I can know it can be very complex. But we actually have lots of things that have been through clinical trials and no misdeeds occurred during these trials. So, for instance, if you take aspirin or you take Advil or you take, just general over-the-counter medications, at some point, all of those medications had to be studied and were
right.
In some sort of research study. So we wouldn't have any medications that people can take if we didn't have research trials. So I just want to put it in context for people, although I know it's scary and there's a lot of skepticism around it, but there's a lot of good that comes from this research.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Our conversation tonight, searching for a vaccine for COVID-19 and clinical trials to try to get that vaccine up and running, but they need people. And how do you get people? How do you get certain groups, especially folks of color? So we're talking about that tonight. Important conversation. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We want to hear from you. We're going to continue this conversation right after this quick break. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. This is the Insight segment. Tonight, our focus is the coronavirus and the research to find a vaccine. To find that vaccine, you need clinical trials. Clinical trials, you need people. How do you get them? And how do you get those who have normally been underrepresented in those trials, specifically people of color and more specifically African Americans? We're talking about that tonight. If you've been involved in a trial, if you're interested in being involved in a trial or want to know a little bit more about it, we want to hear from you out there. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Joining us tonight to give us the medical side of trials and the vaccine and COVID-19 is Dr. Lisa Fitzpatrick, infectious disease physician and founder and CEO of Grapevine Health Medical Center, and Dr. Carla Williams, associate professor of medicine and public health with Howard University Hospital. Again, the phone lines are open, 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Dr. Williams, some of the terms that might pop up if you're kind of, searching around and you're hearing stuff about clinical trials, you'll hear terms like placebos and randomization and control groups. For the layman, what does all that mean?
Yeah, so it's definitely important to break that down into something that's plain and easily understood by everyone. So placebo, a lot of people know what that is. They've heard it over the years. Think of it as the sugar pill.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that looks and seems to the participant and to the researcher like it is the real thing.
Mm-hmm.
So in the case of a vaccine, what people see will look exactly like the real vaccine, but it may just be saline or salt water.
Okay.
And so the placebo has no medical effects. And there's an important reason that we sometimes need a placebo, and that is you want to make sure that what you're seeing in the people who are in the research is really a result of the new treatment that you're testing, and that it's not because the person was already healthier or the person was sicker or the person's a man or a woman. You really have to know that it's the new treatment, the new drug, the new vaccine that's actually making a difference.
202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Information, definitions, if you don't know what some of that stuff is, when we're talking about the coronavirus and we're talking about clinical trials, our doctors in the house are here to tell us what you should know. Dr. Fitzpatrick, I'm going to sort of wheel back a little bit and sort of get really specific about the coronavirus. Today, you know, we heard a report that one person died every minute on Wednesday from coronavirus, with a total of 1,400 fatalities through the U.S. The U.S. COVID death rate now tops over 150,000, with more than 4.5 million infections. We're only 5% of the population around the world, but I think we have about 25% of the coronavirus cases. What is happening here nationally? And when we tie that to trials, it just makes you even think more so. Man, we need those right here in the U.S. So when we see these numbers, what's going on?
It's actually, I think, a national embarrassment. From the beginning, we have not had the national public health response we're accustomed to from the CDC and other public health partners. So, you know, when we first heard about this, you know, my phone was ringing off the hook, and I was assuring people, oh, this will pass. CDC's on top of this, because in any other outbreak situation, there's a playbook. And you adhere to the playbook, you follow the steps, and you can mitigate the spread. So we didn't see the aggressive testing and contact tracing that should have happened from day one or early on. And because of that, we really were behind the eight ball. I also think there were opportunities to prevent the spread of this, or the ongoing transmission, in places that did not have high rates of transmission. So while everyone was watching New York and listening to the governor of New York saying, this is what's going to happen in your state, that was actually never true. But what was true is that there were opportunities for every state to be very aggressive about finding cases, isolating and quarantining, conducting contact tracing. And because that didn't happen in most places, this is the result. And then I think finally, I mentioned earlier the defiance, sort of the way that this issue, the coronavirus, everything about coronavirus now seems to be have become a political issue, and we're now polarized when we look at the response. So I think all of those things together have led us to this embarrassing situation we find ourselves in.
Dr. Fitzpatrick used the word polarized, but in some ways, are we paralyzed because of the politicalness and the political nature of the coronavirus, how much that's really hurt a medical response to it? Or as medical officials, do you sort of that's just noise and you still move forward in what you have to do? Or does that play a role, right, in the kind of research that can be done if politically there's not a lot of will behind it?
Yeah, research cannot occur in a vacuum. I mean, we're part of the fabric of society. So the things that are going on around us are going to affect a lot of aspects of research. It's going to affect where funds go, what type of funds the federal government puts towards research. And I will say that response has been quite robust. There are a lot of new studies coming out. But it's also going to affect people's perceptions. You know, going back to the mask issue, what is the science saying about that? And again, if we can help people better understand why these recommendations are out there. Again, helping people make their own choices. But when you have an environment where information is confusing and conflicting and there is this polarization, you're either on, you know, Camp A or Camp B, people really can't get to the point of having rational conversations. And research is all about rationality. We try to divorce ourselves from, you know, the passion of it and look at the data, but we live in this fraught environment of these political, you know, infighting.
And Dr. Fitzpatrick,
the politics are framing people's perspectives about this. I talked to a gentleman just this past weekend who told me he wouldn't take the vaccine because he saw it as Trump's vaccine, and anything Trump had his hands on wasn't good for black people. Mm. So when we don't have clear messages and education and appropriate messengers, this is a situation we will continue to deal with until we find ways to have targeted messaging from the right messengers, particularly for black and brown people.
Let's go back to the phone lines. We've got James on the line from the city I used to live in, Wilmington, Delaware. Go right ahead, James, with your question or comment.
Yes, never been a part of a trial. I'm not interested in a trial, but I did get tested for antibodies on Monday morning because I felt I may have had coronavirus maybe around a year ago, late August. But my question is, I understand you all are talking about the vaccine, this child study. But earlier when this when corona first hit, interferon alpha 2B, that was hot and heavy down in Cuba. But for some reason, I was wondering why we didn't hear about that in the States, why our media wasn't pushing for this, why our medical people wasn't pushing for this. And then personally, I thought it was something against Cuba.
Let me let them get that in real quick, James, because we're getting tight on time. So either one of you want to jump in on that? Is there any validity to that? And James' question is that drug that I don't know much about, is that something that has been talked about or should be?
So there have been some conversations about it, but the reason interferon wasn't part of the conversation early on is because we just didn't know enough about it. But I would imagine people would be reluctant to use interferon because it is very toxic. It has lots of side effects. And for people, we used to treat people with hepatitis C with interferon before we had the drugs we have now. And a lot of people would say that drug made them feel sicker than their actual health condition. So I think, you know, as it's actually being studied right now, but at that time, when we first learned about this, we wouldn't have known that would even be necessary.
All right, James, thank you so much for your question. We've got about a minute and a half left, and I did want to make sure that our listeners get any information that the doctors may have in terms of websites. But I want to throw this out, if we can, real quick, Drs. Williams and Fitzpatrick. Side effects, is that something potential participants should be worried about in trials? Dr. Williams?
Yes, and you know, every drug, every treatment is potentially going to have side effects. So you want to, A, ask what's known about the side effects so you can, again, be informed. But that's part of the research, is trying to figure out what side effects might happen and who's most likely to get them. And again, that's a big reason why diversity is important, because maybe older people are more likely to get side effects than younger people, et cetera.
Great answer. Dr. Williams, how can folks either get in touch with you or go to a website? Where should folks go to just get more information about this topic?
So again, I'll repeat clinicaltrials.gov if people are interested in trials. If you are a survivor of COVID-19, I would say check out Survivor Corps or The Fight Is In Us. And that's new research coming out from survivors who can help people perhaps with new treatments. And they can find us at Georgetown Howard CTSA.
Dr. Fitzpatrick, any information that you can lead folks to?
Sure. People can go to our website. We are available to answer questions about this. Our website is Grapevine Health, like I heard it through the Grapevine Health.co. And I'll just leave people with a reminder that vaccines sometimes cause your body to have a response, which can look a lot like having a cold or a flu. So we often hear people saying, I don't get a flu shot because it gives me the flu. That's not what's happening. Your body is responding so that it can prepare itself to fight off the infection if you actually encounter it.
Well, great information. Dr. Carla Williams, Associate Professor of Medicine and Public Health with Howard University Hospital, and Dr. Lisa Fitzpatrick, Infectious Disease Physician and Founder and CEO of Grapevine Health Medical Center. Thank you both so much for an important conversation. That's the Daily Drum for this Thursday, July 30th. I'm Bramante Bryant, in for Harold Fisher. Have a great night.